This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, May 3rd of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's show, immigration agents have been using data brokers to skirt privacy measures passed into law last legislative session. Using old face masks to cut carbon? That story and more on H2O Radio's This Week in Water. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News. Then it's How on Earth, the KGNU Science Show. Today, host Susan Moran will be talking trees with arborist experts. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker, known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, James Wise will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
State lawmakers and the governor issued statements last evening in response to reports of a leaked draft suggesting the Supreme Court will overturn Roe v. Wade. Recognizing the Supreme Court will likely overturn the case, state lawmakers earlier in the legislative session passed the Reproductive Health Equity Act, with the governor signing the legislation into law in early April. The new Colorado statute guarantees the right to abortion and other reproductive health care, regardless if the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. Demand for abortion in Colorado will likely increase, as many nearby states have trigger laws banning abortion if the nation's high court invalidates Roe v. Wade. Nearby states with trigger laws are Wyoming, Utah, Idaho, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and Texas. Colorado House Majority Leader Dinea Esgar told the Denver Post last evening that state leaders anticipate that there will be many states where people will be turned away for abortion care, and Colorado will be the place they seek to obtain their care. The lawmaker hopes Colorado has the capacity. Governor Jared Polis signed into law Monday a measure to make Juneteenth or June 19th a state holiday. The annual commemoration celebrates when, in 1865, Union soldiers arrived in Galveston, Texas, and informed enslaved people that they were legally free. The new law enacts the agreement made last year between the governor and the state employees union, who then established the holiday for the state's employees. President Biden also signed legislation last year making June 19th a federal holiday. As with other holidays, private workplaces will have the option to observe Juneteenth or not. Governor Jared Polis also signed legislation into law Monday that ensures sex workers will not face prostitution charges if they report a serious crime. The immunity protection involves reporting for about 24 crimes, including assault, human trafficking, murder, and manslaughter. The legislation stems from sex workers fearing if they report crimes, they will face prosecution themselves, especially if witnessing a crime or reporting crimes in which they are the victims. The legislation received rare unanimous approval in both chambers of the state assembly. More details have come out on the bill by state Democrats that would reduce property taxes and aim to head off a business group's November ballot measure. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The property tax relief would last 2 years, and during that time, state Democrats will try and find a longer-term solution to Coloradans' rising property tax bills. The Colorado Sun reports that Colorado property owners would get a $700 million break on their rising tax bills. This is aimed at preventing Colorado Concern, a statewide pro-business, CEO-based organization, from pursuing a $1.3 billion ballot initiative for Coloradans to vote on this November. Colorado Concerns has agreed to stop pursuing their ballot initiative if the Democrats' proposal doesn't change and passes the legislature. The Democratic legislature would also spend $400 million from the general fund to slow the financial effect of the reduction in expected taxes on schools and local governments. Not everyone is happy with the proposed bill. The Colorado Education Association, the state's largest teachers union, and the group United for a New Economy complained that they were left out of the bill's formation. Republicans responded yesterday by saying the Democrats' bill was supposed to reflect an honest compromise to deliver short-term tax relief to residents and businesses. But they said that this bill is just repurposing Tabor refunds that was due for Coloradans next spring. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Boulder County working groups will present their recommendations for how to best distribute the second half of the $63.3 million worth of federal spending under the American Rescue Plan Act. Under the 2021 American Rescue Plan Act, the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Fund allocated money to Boulder County and many of the nation's local jurisdictions to address impacts caused by the pandemic. To decide where to spend the money fairly, the county put together working groups to review community survey responses and to issue recommendations to the commissioners. The Boulder County Commissioners will hear the recommendations today in a virtual meeting beginning at 4:30 p.m. The County Commission will accept public comment, but registration is required by signing up at the county's website under the webpage covering the ARPA. Those intending to visit the popular recreation areas of Mount Evans or Brainerd Lake this summer will need to make advanced registrations through the website recreation.gov. The Forest Service is requiring reservations for anyone planning to park or visit one of the developed visitor locations between 8 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. this summer. According to Forest Service officials, the tentative opening date for Mount Evans is May 27th, with online reservations opening up today. The Forest Service will tentatively open Brainerd Lake Recreation Area June 10th, with online reservations available beginning May 26. Each recreation area will have a $2 reservation fee. Individuals biking or hiking into the recreation areas will not need to make an advance reservation. Reed Armstrong, public affairs specialist with the Forest Service, says the timed entry program was extremely successful in 2021 by reducing crowding, wait times, and environmental impacts, and Forest Service officials hope visitors are growing accustomed to advanced planning as the program continues into 2022. Today's weather in Boulder includes a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. Today's high will be near 63 degrees. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms are likely in the overnight hours, with a low around 38. The current temperature in Boulder is 36 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The shockwaves of a political bombshell are rippling across the political landscape this morning after Politico published a leaked U.S. Supreme Court draft decision to overrule Roe v. Wade. However, it's news many reproductive rights attorneys and advocates have been bracing themselves for since the administration of former President Donald Trump appointed three justices to the Supreme Court. Many states, including Texas and Mississippi, have crafted laws that limit and challenge access to an abortion, while Colorado has recently expressly guaranteed reproductive rights in state law. Last month, some of the leading reproductive rights attorneys spoke at CU Boulder's Conference on World Affairs. Here's Susan Herman, professor at Brooklyn Law School and former president of the American Civil Liberties Union.
If Roe v. Wade were overruled in one of those initial ways, either moving the gestational age line or just saying there's no fundamental right, some states, the 26 states or however many, would decide to be much harsher than Roe v. Wade and ban abortion. But we all know that there are already states, including Colorado recently, including New York, where I live, which are really trying to be havens now. And one of the basic principles of constitutional law is that the states have to do at least what the U.S. Constitution requires, but they can do more. So right now, if New York or California wanted to protect reproductive freedom by having exactly the Roe v. Wade rules or even more in terms of giving women the opportunity to have an abortion, they're allowed to. However, if the Supreme Court were to say fetuses have constitutional rights, it is possible that would prohibit even New York and California from allowing women to decide to have an abortion because they would be violating the right of the fetus. Again, I don't think that the court would be that extreme. I don't think that's likely. So what it looks like is, depending on how deeply the court overrules Roe v. Wade, we probably have about 26 states that will be you know, really pulling back on the opportunity of women to have an abortion. And we have at this point about 15 or so states that would be allowing opportunities for women to have an abortion.
Again, that was law professor Susan Herman speaking last month at a panel on reproductive rights at CU Boulder's Conference on World Affairs. Excuse me. Turning now to another story about how Colorado lawmakers are attempting to go a step further in legal protections for residents. Last year, the state legislature passed a measure to protect data of residents from immigration agents. But a new report shows federal immigration officials are using third-party data brokers to skirt those state laws. Joining me now to discuss this report is Sienna Mann, organizing and campaigns manager of Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Start us at the beginning. Last year, what exactly did the new law do to protect data of immigrants residing in Colorado?
Well, in 2020, we discovered that state employees at both the Department of Revenue through the Department of Motor Vehicles, the DMV, as well as the Department of Colorado Labor and Employment were actually sharing information with ICE agents directly on an almost daily basis. We passed a law to try to protect information that's collected by our Colorado state agencies to make sure that immigrant families feel comfortable accessing benefits and trust the government to provide personal information to access services, right? That was particularly important during the pandemic. What we've found now that is that, like you mentioned, ICE has contracted with data broker big tech companies like LexisNexis and Thomson Reuters explicitly to get around some of the protections that we've passed here in Colorado and that other states have passed across the country.
And how did you find evidence of this? And describe a bit more about what the findings of this recent report were that found documentation of this circumnavigation of state laws protecting the data rights of local residents.
Well, one of the reasons we started to look dig into it more was that we were still getting calls from people asking us, how did ICE know to pick me up here? How did they have my address? How did they have my license plate number? How did they know who my cousin was? And we realized that even though we'd passed the state law, there were still gaps in our understanding about how ICE was accessing information on folks. And so what we found is that LexisNexis and other data brokers are accumulating vast amounts of data from public and commercial sources. They then sell that data to ICE, and it's coming from a wide array of sources like credit history, bankruptcy records, license plate images, cellular subscriber information. They are then putting all of that information through analytic tools that basically allow them to hand ICE our community's data on a platter and also provide real-time information about booking and release from jail. But they aren't only selling it to ICE, they're also selling it to law enforcement. And a lot of these tools are surveillance products that create things like target lists, heat maps, biometric profiles. These tools are known as predictive policing tools and have been really proven to accelerate racial bias, disproportionately harm communities of color. So we're concerned both about ICE's access to those tools for immigration purposes, but also about the way that those tools might be accelerating racial bias and policing in our state as well.
And to anyone who might be listening to this and thinking, well, you know, I'm a U.S. citizen, I don't really have anything to worry about, how do these tools creep over a line into territory where people who are protected under the U.S. Constitution, should they be worried, or is it just focused specifically on are only people who do not have U.S. citizenship should be worried?
No, absolutely. That's a great question. These giant data brokers are bundling up billions of data points on over 300 million Americans. And so they have profiles on almost the vast majority of Americans. And these giant companies have actually been called out in the past for violating the Fourth Amendment. So Thomson Reuters last year, after basically collecting utility information, had to stop collecting that information because basically they were collecting information that the government itself is not allowed to collect in violation of the Constitution. And so I absolutely think that there's something to be concerned about here, both for non-citizens, but also for citizens like myself, to really question, you know, this vast collection of information and what they're doing with it.
And the surveillance industry was something that Edward Snowden warned about in his leaks a decade ago. And it seems like since then, big tech has only gotten bigger. What are our tools as just residents, as subjects of this surveillance, to be able to protect ourselves?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, this is a place where we absolutely need federal action, where the data and tech industry is evolving much more quickly than our federal laws are evolving. But there are some things that our state can do to protect consumer privacy, to expand on some of the protections we've passed for immigrants and for citizens in the state of Colorado. And so that's something we're going to be working on with lawmakers and looking into. I think there are some personal steps we can take, just knowing that the information that we post publicly on Facebook or other apps is actually being shared, right? And so there's definitely steps that individuals can take to make sure that we're protecting ourselves as well.
And anybody who reads the data privacy policies of apps or platforms or, you know, just regular banking agreements, what have you, there's usually kind of an asterisk for California. Are the California laws a viable model for Colorado?
They are. And Senator Rodriguez last year worked to pass a consumer privacy protection law that I know lawmakers are looking at building on in the future. There's a lot of bipartisan support for privacy protections in the state of Colorado. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how we can expand those in the future, following the lead of California and other states like New York that are working on this.
Sienna Mann, Organizing and Campaigns Manager for Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Time now for the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
Using old face masks to cut carbon. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The serious drought in the U.S. West continues. Extreme and exceptional conditions, the two worst categories, expanded in Colorado, Arizona, and New Mexico.
Lake Mead on the Colorado River, the country's largest reservoir, fell to an unprecedented level below an intake pipe that supplies Las Vegas. The Southern Nevada Water Authority activated a recently constructed low lake level pumping station to provide for nearly 2.5 million residents.
According to water experts, the West is undergoing a transition to a much drier climate that is being called aridification, in contrast to drought, which gives the impression that wetter conditions will return. A recent study showed that it's drier now than in the past 1,200 years.
Starting June 1st, one of the largest water providers in the U.S., the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, will limit outdoor watering to just one day a week for the 6 million residents of Los Angeles, Ventura, and San Bernardino counties.
In the past 2 years, per capita residential water use in Southern California has increased, even though authorities have warned of the severe conditions. If consumption does not go down, all outdoor irrigation could be banned as soon as September.
The climate crisis is causing such dramatic changes to the oceans that a mass extinction of marine species could occur, the likes of which have not been seen since the age of the dinosaurs.
A new study from Princeton University found that if greenhouse gas emissions are not curbed, species in polar regions would be at greatest risk for extinction, and tropical waters would experience the greatest loss of biodiversity.
Global warming has led to changes in two key factors, water temperature and oxygen levels. Warmer water threatens animals that are adapted for cooler climates. It also holds less oxygen as it acidifies from absorbing CO2.
Some marine life in the tropics may be able to cope better with warmer waters and could migrate to more suitable habitats. However, the authors said tropical regions are already so warm and low in oxygen that more climate change may make it uninhabitable for many species. Those that live in polar regions are more at risk because they don't have cooler places to go.
Right now, there are bigger risks to marine species than global warming, such as overfishing, transportation, urban development, and pollution. However, climate change could surpass all those stressors combined.
One of the study's authors, Curtis Deutsch, said that there is strong sentiment among the public that it's too late to avoid this extinction, but that's not what their results show.
Instead, by limiting global warming to 2 degrees Celsius, a target of the Paris Climate Agreement, the severity of extinctions would be lowered by more than 70%.
Concrete is a major component of everything from roads to bridges and buildings because it's relatively cheap, simple to make, and strong. But production of cement, its key ingredient, is carbon intensive and responsible for as much as 8% of global greenhouse gas emissions.
Researchers at Washington State University wanted to address concrete's climate contribution while also tackling a growing waste problem, the number of masks piling up in the environment because of the COVID-19 pandemic.
The team found that by chopping up old masks, which are layers of polypropylene and polyester fibers, and incorporating them into a cement mixture, it created a stronger, more durable concrete that was less prone to cracking.
Microfibers are sometimes added to concrete to strengthen it, but are expensive, so not often used. The researchers say having mask fibers in the mix reduces the amount of cement needed for a project and makes the concrete last longer, reducing carbon emissions and cost.
The researchers' next step is to study whether the concrete can handle frost and de-icers used on roadways. Looking forward, they would like to see the technology applied to waste such as discarded clothing to incentivize recycling.
And finally, the winners of the inaugural Terra Carta Design Lab Awards were announced last week in London. The competition, which was launched by Prince Charles as a part of his Sustainable Markets Initiative, challenged design students to develop solutions to the climate crisis.
One winner, called ZELP, which stands for Zero Emissions Livestock Project, designed a harness for cattle to capture methane the animals burp. The team claims the device, which slips over the animal's head, can reduce emissions by 60%.
Another team, the Tire Collective, is addressing microplastic pollution from vehicles. As we drive, tires shed bits of material every time we brake, accelerate, or turn a corner. The particles can be inhaled as they become airborne or are swept into waterways.
They created a device that attaches to a wheel hub and captures 60% of the particulates. The group plans to develop a closed-loop system to upcycle the fragments into new tires.
And last, another winning team created something called air seeds, which are seed pods made from food waste that can be carried by the wind to quickly reforest and restore areas degraded by human activity.
That's it for This Week in Water. Support comes from GC Green, a veteran, woman, and Native American-owned clean energy and resiliency solutions company. Learn more at gcgreen.com.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
Hello. Saturday afternoon, just transitioning from Reggae Blood Lunch. Catholic and Ruth, and wanted to thank Maka once again for an outstanding show, great music to garden by, and he's been doing it a long time. Hope he keeps doing it a long time. Thank you.
Hello, I'm calling from Louisville. Today's Saturday, April 30th, and I had the pleasure of hearing Tanya Lowendorf's African Roots today, and it was great. What I love about Tanya's programming, when any show she does what a really good DJ does and talk as little as necessary and play great music. And I think a lot of the other DJs at KGNU, especially some of the old-timers, could take a page from Tanya's book. You know, no gimmicks, no silly stories, great music, only talk as much as needed. And it was just such a joy to listen to her show.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, Alexis Kenyon, Jamie Sudler, and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.
On May 21st, KGNU will host a community discussion with award-winning journalist Julian Rubenstein and former gang member Terrence Roberts. At issue, Rubenstein's controversial new release, The Holly, Five Bullets, One Gun, and the Struggle to Save an American Neighborhood. Join us on the third floor of the Buell Media Center as we open a dialogue to address a tangled web of activist, police, and gang relations. This multimedia event will feature sneak previews from the upcoming documentary, The Holly, poetry from Denver's Sacred Voices, and live DJs. Copies of the book will also be available. All proceeds benefit KGNU Community Radio. Space is limited, so save your seat at kgnu.org. That's a community discussion with Julian Rubenstein, author of The Holly, Five Bullets, One Gun, and the Struggle to Save an American Neighborhood, Saturday, May 21st, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Buell Media Center in Denver.
BBC News with Julie Candler. More than 100 civilians have arrived in the Ukrainian city of Zaporizhia after being evacuated from a steelworks in Mariupol, where they had spent weeks in desperate conditions sheltering from Russian forces. Moscow's defense ministry says it's now resumed bombardment at the Azovstal plant.